It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The death of Oscar-winning actor Philip Seymour Hoffman is a reminder that America has a significant drug problem. According to a CBS News report, the number of heroin users has doubled since 2002 to 335,000. Meanwhile, in Allegheny County, 15 overdose deaths have been linked to a mix of heroin and fentanyl. I'm joined now by phone by Dr. Neil Capretto, Medical Director of Gateway Rehabilitation Center. Dr. Capretto, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for asking me today.
And if you, our listeners, have a comment or question, if you would like to join the conversation, we'd like to hear from you. Perhaps you've dealt with a family member who's been dealing with or has dealt with an addiction problem. Perhaps you have dealt with one yourself. We'd like you to share your story with us, your feedback, your ideas at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Dr. Capretto, have you been able to figure out why heroin use is increasing so dramatically in the United States and apparently in this region?
Yeah, I mean, this is what I call a perfect storm. The vast majority of new heroin users that I see, 95 to 99%, started with prescription medicines such as Oxycontin, hydrocodone. And this goes back, and I give in-depth lectures on this subject, to back in the mid to late 90s, there was a big emphasis on better treatment of pain. We absolutely have to treat people who have legitimate pain. And pain became the fifth vital sign by the Joint Commission. All programs had a screen for it. There was big marketing of physicians for pain medicines. And then drugs that started coming out that were very potent, like Oxycontin in the late 90s, with marketing saying these are safe, not addicting, only, you know, street people live under bridges who will have problems with it. And there was a big increase nationally, like oxycodone prescriptions from 1997 to 2005 went up over 700%. But in western Pennsylvania, we saw much higher rates. Most drug trends start on the east or west coast, come to western Pennsylvania several years later. We were really one of the epicenters for Oxycontin because of our demographics, an older population, working class population. And so there was a lot on there. And I've treated thousands of people addicted to drugs like Oxycontin. But what ends up happening is people get on them. They can no longer afford them or find their supply. And along comes this new heroin. The new heroin started coming in the area in the mid to late 90s, which was much more potent. Old heroin from Asia, from the Woodstock era, whatever, was about 10% pure, and you could only get high by using a needle. People got away from heroin somewhat in the 80s when HIV became part of our awareness, and they avoided it, and they started smoking and snorting drugs from, you know, Colombia, South America, cocaine. Those people found if you can make this new heroin 50, 70, and a lot of it is 90% pure, you can start by snorting it. And that's what happened. We had thousands of people get hooked on prescription medicine, went to heroin, which is maybe one-fifth the daily cost, and in a short period of time, they're using needles. So, you know, 20 years ago, heroin was just an inner-city drug. Now it's an every-city drug. It's in every small-town community, you know, throughout western Pennsylvania. Anybody who's listening to this, I guarantee you, there's people buying, using heroin today, and there's thousands of families being devastated by it.
Describe the number and the nature of cases coming through your door.
We've just seen a dramatic, increase against, particularly over the last 10 years. And these are the numbers. In terms of admissions, I've been here 25 years. Goodness, we probably have seen well over 500%, and maybe 1,000% increase in heroin users, I would say, since when I started here. And these are people, again, from all walks of life. I mean, before they would be mainly a person, from, you know, the inner city. Now they're people from, they're mainly middle, upper middle class, mainly Caucasians, from small towns. I mean, they're everywhere. And what's concerning us is younger people are getting involved. We're seeing many adolescents, you know, 16, 17 years old, who are now in their second or third year, and we're seeing an occasional even 14-year-olds who are now been using heroin for 2 or 3 years. And you can start using your imagination of what they have to do to come up for the money for the drug, because they don't give away drugs free. They get involved with crime, stealing, theft, and teenage prostitution.
In the midst of this public health crisis, then, how are you treating this addiction?
Well, we try to treat, one person at a time, one day at a time. If a person is addicted to opioids, whether they be, medicines like OxyContin or heroin, it's very, very painful. If they stop using, they have what's called opioid withdrawal. The street term is dope sickness. And my patients describe it as saying it's like having the worst case of the flu you ever had in your life multiplied times 10 or 100 and feel like there's vices in your head and knives in your stomach. That's why people keep using it day after day. I mean, it's not that they're looking for this necessarily the pleasure. They're really trying to avoid the pain of being sick. So what we try to do, step one, is provide a stabilization, a detox. We use medicines. As I tell my patients, if you stop cold turkey, it's like jumping off a cliff, free falling, and that's pretty miserable and painful, and most people will go back to using before they tolerate that. So we try to create sliding boards, safe medical detox to bring them down, and then that's the tip of the iceberg. The big part is then to teach them how to live a life without the drug. Many of them may have, mental health issues we may have to work with. They may be with us as an inpatient for a couple weeks. Some may go on to longer-term programs, halfway houses for months. We get involved with medication-assisted treatment, opioid blockers such as naltrexone. I mean, there's other agents such as buprenorphine that we use. But we really teach them, this is a chronic disease. It's not like you're coming in and have pneumonia and you get a dose of rehab penicillin for a week or so and then you live happily ever after. You have to stay on top and manage this every day, similar to like somebody with diabetes does, because if you don't manage it and get away from it, it's going to come back and clobber you. And that's why we see even people with years of sobriety who, when they let their guard down, unfortunately often fall prey to a relapse.
And you mentioned something interesting here, Dr. Capretto, which is that in some cases you have to use drugs to treat drug addiction.
Oh, yes. I mean, again, but there's a difference between a unregulated street drug that they're using, without direction, and a medication that's guided to be a tool to stabilize their life. Now, there is, again, some controversy with that, but the research is very strong. When you use medicines properly as part of a total, as we like to call it, addiction is a biopsychosocial spiritual disease. I mean, we're not treating computers with a virus. We're treating human beings with, who are biologically, psychological, spiritual creatures. And when you this disease will beat up a person, attack them in all those domains. And I really think good treatment of a person helps build them up in all those domains. And when you do, you have much better chances of sobriety and having just a better, healthy life. And that's the whole point. To get you out of this nightmare of addiction, and people are not enjoying themselves in addiction. I mean, it's a living nightmare for them every day. But there is an alternative, and I really want to give the message out there: there is hope. Treatment and recovery works, but it's not passive. You've got to reach out and at least put the effort to get it started.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and our guest is Dr. Neil Capretto, Medical Director of Gateway Rehabilitation Center. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. Again, 412-246-2002. We'd like to hear from you. Share your story with us. If you know someone, if you have a family member who has dealt with addiction, and perhaps you yourself have, you may have advice that could help someone else, you can share it with us here. Again, our number, 412-246-2002. Dr. Capretto, we have someone who called in earlier named Owen, a nurse from Scott Township, couldn't stay on the line but wanted to ask you, as a medical provider, how should he respond when or if he thinks a patient might be a drug addict? What are the telltale signs?
Well, signs are... particularly if you know the person, if you've known the person over time, if you see changes in their behavior, money is missing, work is missing. For health providers, what I tell them, addiction is so rampant through healthcare. I mean, in your average family practice, easily 20% of everybody they're seeing has some issues with drugs or alcohol that are complicating their medical care. So if a medical case is not coming along as you would suspect, they're deteriorating, they're not progressing, suspect addiction. If you're involved with pain medicines, get involved with doing urine drug screens, pill counts, things like that, checking the pharmacy. Hopefully, we're working on getting what's called a prescription monitoring program in Pennsylvania. We don't have it yet. Other states have it. This is a program where a health provider can check a database and see if you're going doctor shopping or what other medicines you're on. And in states where doctors actually check that, the studies have shown over 43% of the time it ends up changing their original decision about the medication.
412-246-2002 is the number to call, and we have Barbara on the line from Greensburg. Barbara, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you,
Barbara. Go ahead.
I lost my daughter 3.5 years ago to a heroin overdose. She was in jail for 2 weeks, went into rehab for 2 weeks. I knew nothing about any of it. I never understood any of it. It's just a shame because there's so many young ones passing away from this. And it seems to be getting stronger and stronger. But in rehab, we couldn't afford to send her there for months. She was only there for 2 weeks. And what was so upsetting is the counselor had young children, and I really don't think she knew very much about what was going on.
Well, first of all, Barbara, our condolences, our thoughts go out to you for the loss that you have suffered, something that no parent should have to go through. I'm glad you're sharing this with us. Stay with us here. Dr. Capretto.
It's a terrible disease, and she's right. I see this problem is getting worse in our community before it gets better. It's affecting a lot of young people. With treatment, actually in Pennsylvania, we're better off than many states. There's a lot of states for somebody with heroin addiction, the insurances won't even pay for one day. We often can get approved about 2 weeks, 2 to 4 weeks of inpatient, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. Then there's outpatient programs and things beyond that.
Well, Barbara is saying that her daughter, Barbara, you said your daughter was in rehab for 2 weeks?
Yeah, she was in jail for 2 weeks, and then she was court-ordered into rehab for 2 weeks.
Is 2 weeks, I mean, can that possibly be enough in all cases, Dr. Capretto?
That's the tip of the iceberg. I mean, if you look at the national standards, they recommend for addiction in general a minimum of being involved with 90 days of some program. That could be common. That doesn't have to be all inpatients, but it could be a combination of inpatient, outpatient. And this is professional. Now, we still strongly recommend people get involved with 12-step programs such as Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, but that's above that. And I'm hoping with changes in healthcare that there will be more emphasis. I mean, again, our healthcare system is set up to treat addiction like it's the flu and not a chronic disease, which it is to a large extent.
The one thing that my daughter had told me was, and you had mentioned this before, she said, "Mom, I don't want to do this, but I have to."
Correct.
She said, "I don't have a choice." And it was what it did to my family. I mean, it just, it's devastating. And I think what's so surprising to me is to find out how many families are going through this, and they don't know what to do.
Yeah, there's thousands of families. We're actually having a town meeting through a group called the Alliance at North Hills Middle School, 7:30 this Thursday night to provide some information. I can certainly talk to you offline about some resources in the area, but we say addiction hijacks the brain. It is so powerful. They do experiments with laboratory mice where they give them a lever for food or water and a lever for other reinforcing things. And they'll do the other things. They'll always go back to food or water because their brains are hardwired through millions of years of evolution to survive. But when they give them a lever for food or water and another to get heroin into their brain, the majority will keep pushing for heroin, ignoring food or water to the point of death. Well, how can that be? How can that override the survival mechanism? That's because it does trick the brain to say, this heroin is more important for your survival than even food or water. If you don't get more, you're going to die. And we can say, well, that's, you know, that's dumb mice, but that's being very not naive. I mean, look, we're seeing the same thing happen with our people in our community. Unfortunately, it's getting worse.
And Barbara, if you would like to get some more information from Dr. Capretto, you can call back with your info, and we will pass it along to the doctor, and so that he can get a hold of you. Dr. Capretto, one of the things that Barbara just mentioned before we get to some other calls here, Barbara mentioned that her daughter was incarcerated for a couple of weeks before she even went to rehab. What do you think of the role that prison plays in treatment and rehabilitation for people who have a heroin addiction?
Well, it's getting somewhat better, but we have a lot of room for improvement. I mean, my personal view is addiction should be viewed as a public health problem. And individual users, we're better off helping and treating them than incarcerating them. Now, I also believe people should be responsible for their behavior. If you rob a bank or, you know, stab somebody, I mean, you have to be held accountable for that. But often people go in jails and prisons and the majority of cases get no education or treatment for their addiction and come out worse with their addiction. There is a movement called drug courts that I think is a wonderful idea. I support it, using the criminal justice system to kind of monitor people. And that has been shown with addiction to dramatically reduce incarceration rates and improve, you know, success with sobriety significantly. It's not 100%. But it's a good investment. The other concern about people coming out of jails and sometimes even out of treatment programs is their tolerance goes down. You know, people with opioid addictions will maybe be born with a high tolerance, but through repeated use, they may start using, let's say, 3 bags of heroin a day, and after 9 months to a year, they're up to 20 bags a day. If they're incarcerated for a couple months, their tolerance goes back down, and if they go back out and try to use even like 10 bags that they could handle before, that could kill them now. And that's something we try to educate people about with overdose prevention education.
412-246-2002, if you would like to join the conversation with our guest, Dr. Neil Capretto, Medical Director of Gateway Rehabilitation Center. Let's go to Arlene in Pittsburgh. Arlene, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, I've been listening, and this is a little bit of a different, say, a comment. I was a heroin addict for a few years. I got clean and was clean for many years. I then had several surgeries on my back, and I moved to Pittsburgh, and I was unable to get insurance out here due to pre-existing conditions, and I was even unable to get onto Medicaid. And I was unable to get any type of medical treatment and ended up relapsing due to some pain issues. And when I finally was able to get myself insured, I had an impossible time getting any sort of, say pain management treatment or anything else. I'm still struggling with that. And I have to say that there's a huge difference between, say, a heroin use and any sort of pain, opiate pain medication. When I was prescribed pain, say, pills or opiate pain pills, I never abused them. You would have to take a huge amount of them to have it equal any amount, say, of heroin that I ever used. And I just think that there's a large number of people that turn to heroin because of the fact that doctors ignore their pain. And it then ends up, you know, say, people end up turning to it out of necessity at times.
Well, that's true. I mean, the whole field of pain treatment, and I lecture on this, and I've been in many conferences, the future of pain treatment is pain specialists really are going to have two skill sets, understanding and treating pain, but also understanding addiction. Most people, they get overprescribed for too long the pain medicines, and that leads to their addiction. But sometimes there are people who are, you know, undertreated, and people in pain, like I said, it's pain that drives addiction. If they don't get it adequately through a physician, they'll find a way on their own. And unfortunately, your story, Arlene, is a common one that I hear, that people have some sobriety time and then have some surgery or accident that they need pain medicine, but they may not be managed well or educated about the dangers of that, and then that can lead to a relapse. We lecture our patients about that. At least I try. I talk about that on a regular basis.
And now and what about her inability to find insurance, Dr. Capretto?
Well, now, for addiction treatment, now the good thing in Pennsylvania is, most people either have insurance or they qualify for Medicaid, but there are some people who fall between the cracks. Every county in western Pennsylvania has funding available for at least drug and alcohol treatment. Usually you have to call your county drug and alcohol office for that. Now, getting other medical services for pain, that falls outside of drug and alcohol. Now, one of our hopes with the future, with like the Affordable Care Act, that will fill in the gaps, because we know there are millions of people who are underinsured or don't have insurance for their medical needs in the country, and that's something we really got to improve.
Arlene, thank you for that call.
Thank you
for sharing your story, and good luck to you. Let's go to Dana in Pittsburgh. Dana, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. My question for Dr. Capretto is that my daughter went off to college and suddenly was surrounded with all these young people using heroin and using it very recreationally and apparently without much consequence. Her one friend was starting with one bag a day, and now she's advanced to two bags, but they don't see any, withdrawal. They don't see the dope sickness. And she uses, once or twice, maybe three times a week. Now, I know it's bad and it's going to go worse, but how is it that she's able to use it like that? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, it's like other drugs. I mean, there's people who do, cocaine occasionally. Now, on any a small amount of heroin generally is not going to hurt you. What hurts you is if you keep using and escalate and use larger amounts. There's people who have alcohol problems who maybe drank kind of, quote, socially for years, but 20, 30 years later, it got out of control. With heroin, there's going to be very few of any of these people, if they continue using, that 5 years from now, it's going to be okay. My guess is, it may be a fad for some of them, but it is a very, very slippery slope. And people quickly develop tolerance, so they may be using one or two bags now here and there. But if that continues, they're going to be using, 5, 6, 10, because I've seen it over and over again. There are very few, even though with drugs like alcohol, there are social drinkers. There are very few social heroin users. I mean, you're either in, up to your neck in a quicksand, or you're out of it. And this is what we're seeing. We're seeing a lot of young people, and it's hard to get away from it. Most people over 30 never even heard of heroin, when they're in high school or college, and now the young people we're seeing are surrounded by it and can't get away from it. So I would warn your daughter, do not jump into it. And what you don't know with the bags is the next bag could be one of these fentanyl-containing bags, and maybe they could handle two bags of the regular stuff, which is still strong and killing people. If you put fentanyl into it, that might be like multiplying it 10 or 20 times, and you can die. Because I've actually talked to some of my patients who are used to shooting up, 7, 10 bags of heroin a day, injected two bags and went unconscious and needed Narcan to revive them.
So, Dana, thank you for the call. Sure. So what you're saying is you're playing Russian roulette.
You were really on very thin ice. I mean, the danger and addictive potential is very strong, particularly the new heroin and especially this fentanyl-laced heroin. I mean, even if this fentanyl, the Theraflu stuff goes away, we still have a major crisis with heroin in our community.
Let's take one last call from Sean from Johnstown. Sean, listening to us on our translator station out there. Sean, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, Sean.
My fiance's brother, which is soon to be my brother-in-law, went into the hospital 3 days ago from a batch of heroin and fentanyl. He is aspirated, and he has pneumonia.
Yes.
I have very severe pain, and they gave me that patch at the local pain management, and I'm actually scared to take it. I'm 35. I'm kind of what they call an old-fashioned alcoholic, but what they're doing now is it seems like that the younger people are turning to this, and I don't see people, at least my age or younger, seem to be in the using drugs and you know, different, you know, Oxycontin, things like this are becoming more, you know, popular with younger crowds. I guess drinking has maybe went on the wayside because this is a quicker fix. But he has received that, you know, bad dose that has been going around, and the doctors have told him he's lucky that he's going to be alive and he's going to make it.
So I understand you had a question about regulation, Sean.
Yeah, I wanted to know if they're looking into this, because what would make sense to me is if they're using fentanyl with the other drugs, wouldn't that be more expensive for the people who sell it?
And, right, but you know, it's more potent. The fentanyl that's on the street in these bags of heroin is not coming from drugstores or pharmaceutical companies. There's illegal chemists making it in labs, kind of like Walter White did on Breaking Bad. And that may be more costly, but people know it's the strong stuff. I mean, it's about marketing. Drug dealers compete with one another. Well, how do I separate myself from the pack? Why try to have a more potent, stronger product? And one way to do that is to put fentanyl in my heroin. Now, the confusing part of it at first to me was, well, they're going to lose customers through death. They may have four or five people die, but because that becomes in more demand, then they're willing to lose a couple people to attract 30 or 40 more people. And on the streets, they tell me that's just considered the cost of doing business. So it's pretty ruthless out there. There's no regulations on, you know, what drug dealers on the street sell. So you mentioned you're on fentanyl for pain. Well, you're probably on a fentanyl patch, which is very potent, and be very careful with that. Now, you make sure you absolutely need it, but I know people on the street will take those patches off of people and inject them, you know, inject them or chew them, and people have died from that. So, again, we have to treat pain, but we have to be mindful of the problem of addiction at the same time.
Dr. Neil Capretto has been our guest. He's the medical director of Gateway Rehabilitation Center. We've come to time, but Dr. Capretto, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your insights with us today on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul. My pleasure.
Coming up, Politico Magazine is announcing a year-long series showcasing innovative ideas from cities across the nation, including Pittsburgh. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.